True Seekers, Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Welcome to Friday. Just remember, anyone who has the power to make you believe absurdities has the power to make you commit atrocities. Ooh! Welcome to Friday. God, I'm glad it's Friday. It's the only day of the week where I feel like a release of tension. You know, I mentioned that on the blog today, on the mini blog. I think the mini blog today was only about four sentences, but excuse me, Miss Producer, what did you say?
I said, well, there was a reason for that. We were without phone internet service for hours and hours today.
That's true. We were terrified this afternoon because we get most of our services from this filthy corporate thug AT&T, which is just one of the worst corporations in the history of this planet, and we get all of our service from them. And so when one thing goes out, it all goes out. So Kathy was on the phone today for about 2-3 hours with someone in Bangalore, India, until we finally got someone out here, got everything reconnected. So it was a Friday that, in an extra special way, made us glad that tomorrow's Saturday. I'm sure you have seen or have heard today one of the lead stories being batted around like a ball of catnip by a couple of alley cats, and that is the Army desertion rate is up 80% since 2003, since George Bush started his murderous invasion and occupation of a country that just couldn't do anything about it, you know, just, okay, kill me quick. The sad facts are soldiers strained by 6 years at war are deserting their posts at the highest rate since 1980, with the number of Army deserters this year showing an 80% increase since Bush ordered the invasion so he could play commander-in-chief. Weasley bastard. Now, keep in mind, these totals are still far lower than they were during the Vietnam War when the draft was in effect. I think the desertion rate at the height of the Vietnam War was about 5%, which is extremely high. Extremely high. However, the desertion rate now from the military shows a steady increase over the past 4 years and a 42% jump since last year. Roy Wallace, Director of Plans and Resources for Army Personnel, said, quote, we're asking a lot of soldiers these days. They're humans. They have all sorts of issues back home and other places like that. So I'm sure it has to do with the stress of being a soldier, end quote. Maybe it has to do with the stress of realizing you're being lied to and conned and you may die for somebody else's lie. Maybe that's it. And of course, that does produce stress, but I would disagree with old Roy Wallace here, the Director of Plans and Resources for Army Personnel. They have all sorts of issues back home. Is that what you're saying? Yeah, like trying to stay alive and having a family and kids and so on and so forth. It's one thing to defend one's country. It's something else, again, to get involved in a toy war set up by a murderous son of a bitch who has no concept of what war or service in the military what's involved in all that. And that, of course, would be George W. Bush. The Associated Press goes on to say the increase comes as the Army continues to bear the brunt of the war demands, with many soldiers serving repeated lengthy tours in Iraq and Afghanistan. Who, you know, you've got to wonder what sorry, sour bastard set this up to ask or to demand that people go into 15-month-long tours of combat in urban warfare, where they're caught in not war. They're not asked to go be soldiers. They're asked to go do what? I don't know. What the hell are we being our soldiers being asked to do? This is a civil conflict. It is something that has been building for decades, if not centuries. We're caught in the middle of it. Our soldiers are caught in the middle of it. There's no support back home. Zero. The only support our military is getting right now is from their immediate families. The right-wing politician thugs and the right-wing pundits on television, radio, all of whom are cowards to the core, give C-O-R-E, give repeated assurances that, you know, can't cut and run, when each one of them, given a chance, cut and run. It's horrifying. So it's, you know, there's a reason that these soldiers are saying to hell with this. More power to them. By the way, there are four main ways that soldiers can leave the Army before their first enlistment contract is up. First would be the determination is made that they're unable to meet the physical fitness requirements. That would have been Bush. They are found to be unable to adapt to the military. That would have been Bush. They go AWOL. Well, that would have been Bush. And the fourth way is they say they are gay and are required to leave under the so-called don't ask, don't tell policy. Well, that policy didn't exist when Bush went AWOL, or he would have said, hi, can I get out of here, please? Please let me out of here. This plane just breaks me out. It gives me diarrhea. Or something like that. Desertion rates. It's just astonishing what the Republicans, what the Bush crime family, what they've done to our military, isn't it? One of the bloggers points out something. You know all the bad publicity last week about Hillary Clinton giving a speech somewhere, a Q&A session in Iowa, and one of the Clinton campaign staffers apparently asked this college student to ask about global warming, and oh my God, the screaming and yelling, oh, she had a plant. Well, guess what? It turns out that CNN planted that so-called diamonds or pearls question that occurred in the debate so-called last night. One of the bloggers has this out there. The questioner played along. Here's what happened. Maria Luisa, University of Nevada at Las Vegas, a student who asked Hillary Clinton whether she preferred diamonds or pearls at last night's debate, wrote on her MySpace page this morning that CNN forced her to ask that frilly question instead of another pre-approved query about the Yucca Mountain Nuclear Waste Repository. She said at her MySpace page, Maria Luisa wrote, every single question asked during the debate by the audience had to be approved by CNN. I was asked to submit questions including so-called lighthearted/fun questions. I submitted more than 5 questions on issues important to me. I did a policy memo on Yucca Mountain a year ago and was the finalist for the Truman Scholarship. For sure, I thought I would get a chance to ask the Yucca question that was approved by CNN days in advance. End quote. But no, at the last moment, apparently, the CNN staffers came up here and said, Maria, your question is going to be about diamonds or pearls. Okay. And the blogger says, well, is there a story here or not? I mean, the questioner is a woman, plus she's brown, plus she's Hispanic, so I think she should just accept the honor of being chosen by our betters to ask Hillary a girly question and shut up about it, huh? Nice work, CNN. It's like Kabuki theater. Do you prefer diamonds or pearls? Now, is there, what did they ask? Didn't they ask her husband years ago on MTV, do you prefer boxers or briefs? Good God. Have you had enough? Have you had enough about the, of this, all this stuff? Boy, I have. Although, Hillary did liven things up last night with her accusations that her rivals are mudslinging. I wouldn't call it mudslinging. Mudslinging is what they did to John Kerry. I think Hillary is confusing the fact that they're not attacking her because she's a woman. They're attacking her because she's a head. And that's what you're supposed to do, isn't it? I mean, I guess that's what you're supposed to do. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. What I should hear and see.
Hey, neocons, don't be afraid. Be very afraid. It's more Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. I didn't watch the debate last night, obviously. I was doing a radio show, sort of. But I've seen some clips. And what was how long did it take for Dennis Kucinich to get something said, and then he had 8 or 9 words. Joe Biden didn't get called on for 15 minutes. One thing I don't understand, and I saw this, I forget who wrote this today, but why allow people like Wolf Blitzer or I don't want to just pick on CNN, any of these clowns to conduct the so-called debates. This is insane. What these phony-ass fake news people want is to see some sort of dust-up. They want to see Obama call Clinton an amateur, or Clinton call Obama an upstart, or they want to see some sort of arguing on the stage. And it's disgusting. Let me suggest something. When these campaigns rake in the hundreds of millions of dollars that they rake in, since that money is going to be spent on television anyway, why not have all the candidates who want to get involved here? Now, this would be grossly unfair because Dennis Kucinich, for example, doesn't have $50 million in the kick. Neither does Mike Gravel. But let the Democratic National Committee then, if not the candidates all chipping in $10 million apiece, let the Democratic National Committee buy the time. And then put the 7 or 8 or 9, however many there are, candidates out there on the stage, and let them ask each other questions. Just take turns. Or let each one of them make a 4-minute statement. Do you have any idea, if you've watched any of these debates, what any of these candidates are really about? Now, seriously, do you? I don't.
Well, they're not debates.
Well, that's my point.
You know, they're not debating each other. They're just answering inane stage
they're
questions.
They're fending off half-assed questions from people like Wolf Blitzer or Tim Russert, Or the rest of these guys who are no more newscasters or reporters than I am. They're script readers. They get on television on their respective networks or channels, and they read a script. And the supervising producers or whomever who decide, hey, let's see if we can get a little Jerry Springer action going here. Just like, who was it, the guy from CNN? Hell, I used to write for him. I can't remember his name. He was one of the anchors who asked the Massachusetts governor who was running against, was he running against Bush? God, I'm forgetting all these names. What would you do if your wife was raped and murdered? Yeah, they asked Michael Dukakis. And who was the guy at CNN, the anchor? I used to write for him. What the hell was his name? I'm drawing a complete blank. But it was a CNN guy who asked that half-assed question. And Dukakis, being Dukakis, just with that kind of eyes-half-open look, answered some inane jerky statement that had nothing whatsoever to do with anything. Oh, I get so tired of it. I really do. But if the goal, well, I'm thinking ahead here on my question I'm about to ask, and it's pointless. I was going to say if the goal of the Democratic Party or the Republican Party is to provide the best possible candidate for the people of the United States, why don't the respective committees buy the time? And then all of a sudden I realized what I was about to say. They're not, neither the Democratic National Committee or the Republican National Committee. Neither one is interested in providing the best possible candidate for the American people. They are interested in providing the person who can win for their party and for their sponsors, whether those sponsors are 90% corporations or as with the Republicans, or 60% corporations as with the Democrats. Oh, well, let's just pack up and go home. I mean, I'm thoroughly depressed. Absolutely thoroughly depressed now. Oh, my God. So any kind of information that any of us, we voters out here in the great vast wasteland of the American political landscape, any information we might have gotten last night has been subsumed into the question of whether or not Hillary Clinton would prefer diamonds or pearls, and whether or not her opponents are slinging mud. I don't know. It's just, it's pretty bleak, isn't it? Huh? It's pretty bleak. We all ought to get together and just build a big bonfire someplace and dance. Don't you think? All right, it is Friday, so we're going to do phone calls here a lot quicker than we normally do. The BBC is reporting that foreign tourists to many of India's most famous landmarks will no longer be able to pay the entrance fee in U.S. dollars. For example, the up until now, foreign tourists to, like, the Taj Mahal, had the option of paying in dollars or rupees. And the ruling will affect nearly 120 sites in India. Dollars will not be accepted, and the reason is because the bottom is falling out of the dollar. This is another gift to the American people from George W. Bush. About 26 before the hour. Oh yeah, there's a fifth way to that soldiers can leave the army before the first enlistment contract is up. In addition to determine unable to meet physical fitness requirements, or unable to adapt to the military, or they're gay, or they go AWOL. Yeah, the fifth way, and I'm sorry, I forgot, is to be killed serving in Bush's adventure. Reg at TVNewsLies.org, Barry Bonds versus Howard Krongard this week. That was a story, the two stories this week, that just got my stomach churning. And the winner is Howard Krongard, a name barely known to most Americans and someone who remains barely known thanks to the corporate U.S. media. Here's the competition. A top story this week in the news. Barry Bonds was indicted on charges of 4 counts of perjury and 1 count of obstruction of justice. Bond stands accused of lying under oath to a grand jury about his use of steroids. If he is found guilty on all counts, Bond faces up to 15 years in prison. Barry Bonds is obviously a menace to us all. He apparently poses a great threat to all our lives and to the safety of the nation. Let us all hope that justice is done and the full force of the law is brought down on this dangerous criminal. The non-story this week in the news, Howard J. Krongard, the U.S. State Department Inspector General, lied under oath to the House Committee on Oversight and Government Reform. It seems that federal prosecutors have been looking into allegations of waste, fraud, and abuse in Iraq by Blackwater USA, not to mention murder. And surprise, surprise, Krongard was on the carpet for interfering with the investigation. And guess what else? Someone found out that Howard's brother, Alvin, Buzzy Krongard, sits on the advisory board of Blackwater. When asked about this, Howard told the House committee that Buzzy had no connection to Blackwater. He knew nothing, not a thing about this, even after a call to his brother. But after a recess, Krongard knew the jig was up. He admitted that it was true. Buzzy was a member of the board, but had never, ever told him about it. Small problem. Brother Buzzy called the committee and told them that he had indeed told Brother Howard of his connection to Blackwater. Uh-oh, that's perjury. Howard Krongard lied under oath about a matter relevant to an ongoing investigation. Perjury is a crime. You want to bet nothing happens to the man? Howard Krongard is obviously not a menace to anyone. He apparently poses no threat to our lives or to the safety of the nation. Let's all hope that Chairman Henry Waxman doesn't look too closely into allegations of perjury after Thanksgiving, as he's promised to do. And let us all hope that Krongard, like Scooter Libby, Karl Rove, and other Bush criminals, continue to escape prosecution and punishment of any sort. Barry Bonds is allegedly a criminal. Howard Krongard is a servant of the people. After all, there is something to be said about consistency and cronyism in a time of war, and, oh yes, never forget that everything changed after 9/11. Oh, God. The name I was trying to think of is Bernard Shaw, Bernie Shaw, the one who asked Dukakis the question about what Dukakis would do if some criminal, I guess the assumption was, or the underlying assumption was, it had to be a criminal who was out on probation or parole, because you remember the Willie Horton story, right? Or how that was spun by Lee Atwater. So Bernard Shaw, like I say, a guy I used to write for, who was an anchor at CNN, asked that very pertinent question of Dukakis. It was a half-witted, jackass question, but the answer that came from Dukakis was half-assed and half-witted and stupid also. The answer was just, you know, at that point, what am I talking about, 1988? Oh, my God, it was almost 20 years ago. But at that point, Dukakis should have looked at Bernard Shaw and said, oh, listen, I'll tell you what, go get me a cup of coffee, all right? Get out of my face with that dumbass question. One last thing here, and then we're going to get your calls. After Britain partially withdrew their forces from southern Iraq last September, the White House, in effect, slandered our closest ally, claiming, quote, British forces have performed poorly in Basra, and the reason they're leaving, it's the best that they, it's best that they leave. The White House should take notice of what has happened in Basra since the British troops have left. According to Major General Graham Binns, commander of British forces in Basra, the presence of British troops instigated violence, and now violence has reportedly dropped to one-tenth that of earlier levels. 90% reduction in violence. Major General Graham Binns told reporters Thursday on a visit to Baghdad's Green Zone, quote, the presence of British forces in downtown Basra, Iraq's second largest city, was the single largest instigator of violence. Binns added, we thought, if 90% of the violence is directed at us, what would happen if we stepped back? Sectarian tensions in Basra, predominantly Shiite city, are not as high as in other parts of Iraq, but it has seen major fighting between insurgents and coalition troops. The people of that city are no longer subject to the significant level of violence that was directed against the British forces. In April, 12 British troops were killed in Iraq, in contrast to one in October. Furthermore, Binns said, quote, British officials expected a spike in such intra-militia violence after they pulled back from the city center, were surprised to find none, end quote. And when announcing a further withdrawal about a month ago, the new Prime Minister, Gordon Brown, said Basra was calmer since British forces handed over their base in early September. Gordon Brown said, indeed, in the last month there have been 5 indirect fire attacks on Basra Air Station compared with 87 in July. Now, obviously, that province still sees ongoing volatility, but the lesson learned by the British, that they provoked violence instead of quelling it, is one that could be applied to the U.S. in Iraq, you think? Nah. Must be lies from that filthy liberal media. Phone calls. Let's do some phone calls here and have some mercy. Not make everybody late. Wait for an hour and a half. Let's start with AJ, the Music Factory, calling from the Catskills, New York. Hey, AJ.
Ho, ho, ho.
No, no, no. Ha, ha, ha.
How are you, handsome?
I wonder if somebody's going to say nappy-headed. Ho, ho, ho.
That was expressly for Kathy.
Yeah, I know. She's sitting here looking at me, ready to pull the plug on the program now and say, what? You want to be like, what's his name? Lose your job? Oh, God.
How are you tonight?
I'm doing fine, all things considered.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wanted to speak about 2 things tonight, if I can. When Feinstein, you'll excuse me, by the way, I'm just getting over a cold. When Feinstein caved, no, excuse me, not when Feinstein caved, there was a picture, I think I may have sent it to you, about with Feinstein and her arm. She was arm in arm with Stupid.
With Chuckle Nuts.
Yep.
Yeah, I saw the picture. Yeah, she has a lot of enlightened self-interest. Don't forget, her husband, what is he, a lobbyist for the defense industry?
Yes, he's
involved in it. They make a lot of money off death and destruction, the Feinstein family. So for her to put up too much resistance, she puts up token resistance every now and again against the Bush crime family, but too much resistance, and a lot of these Democrats have been told very, very clearly, I think, you know, your bread and butter will end. You can resist a little bit for appearance sake for the folks back home, but don't tackle us on the important stuff. And Feinstein has certainly fulfilled that.
Well, when I looked at that picture, I sort of had an epiphany. I had a sensation, the same sensation as when I look at Republicans. You know, when I see a picture of a Republican, I thought, holy Christ, I hate her as much as I hate any Republican.
Yeah.
And what occurred to me is what they, you know, they talk about abused children, that they wind up hating the parent that just sits by and watches almost more sometimes than the abuser, because they're the one that can do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I no longer hold I've said this before, I no longer hold Republicans responsible. They're evil. That's their nature.
Right.
But Jesus, I mean, you know, this arm in arm business is totally, totally inappropriate. And this caving on the attorney general, I mean, you know, I just, it's like I just realized I really do. I can't stand them. I can't stand them every bit as much as the Republicans.
Well, just like the the big kind of scratchy image that I had the other day was the one of Nancy Pelosi running after or hustling after Dennis Hastert after he made his last speech.
Yep.
In the House to give him a hug. In the first place, I don't know how she gave him a hug. The son of a bitch is as big as a house. She probably just grabbed, I don't know, a chunk of flesh and squeezed it. But you know, what she should have done, in my opinion, was just to turn her back on him when he gave a speech. Just stand up in the well of the House. Now, I know they won't do that. None of them do that to each other because it's all one great big suck fest.
Yep.
And they just simply will not take a stand. And it's very irritating. Hold on a second, H. I got a break here.
Sure.
We'll come back.
Sure,
and
go ahead.
Give you a chance to blow your nose, and then we'll come back and finish up. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Senators and lawyers. The quality of mercy is not.
Victims and heroes.
The quality of mercy is not.
Murderers and martyrs.
the man conservatives love to hate, it's Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. We're talking with AJ, the music factory, who's called in from the Catskills in New York. Where were we, AJ?
Hey, handsome. I was thinking of this woman who sent an email to you a couple of days ago about talking to a perfectly rational person.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Who was a conservative. And I think I've recently lost a friend of about 35 years.
Oh, my.
We've been, you know, kind of in a friendly way sparring all this time.
Right.
But, you know, things have just gotten critical in this country. And I've been kind of wondering for the longest time how long we would be able to do this in a friendly way.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I very conveniently, when you say, you know, all Republicans are scum or all Republicans are idiots, or I always, you know, kind of in the back of my mind say, oh, except for my friend. And it's not that I'm admitting that's what my friend is, but, you know, we've gotten to a point in this country where, like it or not, we're polarized.
Mm-hmm.
And it's either this way or that way, yes or no. What do you believe? What don't you believe? And
let me add something. The thing that really irritates me about that is that we Democrats, or we liberals, or we on the left, so-called, never proposed that polarization. There was no such thing in the Democratic Party as a Southern strategy. There was no such thing in the Democratic Party to divide people. There was no such thing in the Democratic Party as negative advertising. That's a Lee Water, Atwater invention.
Atwater, yeah.
And whenever I hear that charge, both sides have to tamp it down, I get so pissed off, because it's
right.
The Republican Party that did this. It's the Republicans who went after the Clintons mercilessly with everything they could throw at them. It was the Republicans who reduced our political system to nothing but a fight with great big fistfuls of human excrement. And I hate them for it, AJ.
Yes, and as if to go to that argument, my friend started off a conversation by saying, you know, we're here in New York State, and he started off the conversation by saying, I hate your governor. and then this was before Spitzer backed down. And then he went on, you know, this tirade about what Spitzer wanted. And I said, well, I hate your president. How about that? And then I said, he called Spitzer out of control. And I said, you know what? In 8 years, I've never heard you say that George Bush and the Republicans were out of control. And, one thing led to another, and I just haven't heard from him. And unless I'm overreacting, and, you know, and maybe he disappeared because he's busy, but it's not like him. It kind of goes to what, you know, that scenario that went down between us. I'm just starting to separate myself from, and it's not that I don't love him and I won't miss him if the friendship's ended.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's kind of like in the movies when a character is taken over by the vampires, you say, there's nothing I can do. They're dead. They're the undead.
Yeah.
They've been sucked in. And that person that I know is no longer the same person. And I'm just very upset about it. And I really resonated with me what that woman sent to you.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Exactly.
Hey, I just wanted to chime in there, AJ, because
there've been some people
like that recently in my life that I'm kind of on a level where, you know, whether to ditch them or keep them. And one of the points that I think that I saw, I think I heard it on Olbermann or some other show actually, about, you know, real fiscally responsible conservatives, people who are true social conservatives and whatnot, are horrified by what's going on in government. They're, you know, people who are true Republicans and true conservatives in the true sense.
I know, and this guy was one of them, Kathy, but the thing is this, unless they, you know, the ones that really seem to be able to say that and admit it are few and far between, and they're...
Well, they're the only ones worth keeping in your life, though.
I know, but they're forced to make a decision. They're forced to either admit they were wrong or stand with this regime.
And 99% of them will stand with the regime. And hence my statement that all Republicans are part of the problem. You know, I used to believe what Kathy just said, that there was such a thing as a true conservative, somebody who might be amenable to change, social change, but you know, you're going to have to, if it's gays having the right to marry or form civil unions is the same as non-gays, okay, but it might take them 30 or 40 years to get there. But you don't have that anymore, because the right wing operatives figured out that that was a volatile issue. So let's use it as a way of dividing Americans, not bringing Americans together. As far as fiscal responsibility, what a joke. What an absolute laugh. Ronald Reagan bankrupted the country. George Bush the first bankrupted it further. Clinton, because of his policies and a booming economy, started to bring it back, and George Jr. bankrupted it again. These are Republicans who repeatedly have destroyed this country fiscally. So
yeah.
Any argument that any Republican, even the ones that fall into the you know, the up east, who are the Olympia Snow and Susan, the senator
Collins,
even those people still support Bush if you look at their voting records right down the line. So to hell with all of them. I can't deal with any of these Republicans.
Well, that's the thing, that the debate is almost over. We're not talking about liberal versus conservative anymore. We're talking about stopping the bleeding and ending this regime. And either you stand with it or you don't.
That's right.
You know, so listen, better dead than red.
Well, it's come down to a moral choice now. And I've heard that batted around in the course of my political life, but it's truly a moral choice now. You either go with the ethical or moral center that is still can be found in the Democratic Party. I'm not talking about Democratic politicians, but in the Democratic Party. Or you go with the immoral, bloody, vile, non-ethical core that you find in the Republicans. Hey, I got to leave there. Thanks, AJ.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, take care. Take care.
Yep.
We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. Jody in Los Angeles sent an email here about the debates. She writes, Mike, I think it was Tom Hartman today who made the observation that the questions in the Democratic debates are, quote, Republican, end quote, questions. The Democratic questions, like those of poverty and working and the middle class, were not being asked. Question is why? At the behest of the candidates or the Republican bias of the mainstream media? I'll go with the mainstream media. Brad Blog has an interesting piece up about more allegations of corruption against the State Department's Inspector General. What's his name? Howard Krongard. He has now recused himself from a second major probe under the purview of the State Department's Inspector General. The new recusal was announced yesterday and came at the request of House Oversight and Committee Government Reform Committee Chairman Henry Waxman. The new development follows, this is what Brad Blog has at his site, the new development follows a dramatic moment during a hearing before Waxman's committee on Wednesday when Krongard was forced to recuse himself from the investigation into Blackwater after it was revealed that despite his earlier denials, his brother sits on the board for the controversial paramilitary government security contractor making matters potentially worse for Howard. His brother Buzzy issued a statement after the hearing contradicting Howard's testimony regarding the timing of when Howard learned that Buzzy was on the Blackwater board. Now, we've already established that Howard has committed perjury before a House government committee. We also have pretty much established that nothing will happen to him. We've also pretty much established that Barry Bonds will go to prison because he took steroids. Bradblog has, it's unclear at the moment whether Democrats on the committee will pursue perjury charges against the State Department Inspector General. Well, Brad, I can tell you right now that no, of course they won't. It's off the table. However, Krongard's latest recusal stems from what appears to be obstruction of justice and witness tampering in a criminal probe by the Department of Justice into the way billions of dollars in contracts for the construction of the U.S. Embassy complex in Baghdad were let, how those contracts were let by the State Department. A report, by the committee's majority staff referred to the Justice Department probe and also said that Krongard, against his staff's advice, met in August with someone implicated in, quote, potential criminal activity, end quote, uncovered during a State Department audit of the embassy contract. Then, this report says, Krongard met in September with someone else under investigation by the Justice Department. A source, speaking on condition of anonymity, identified that person as Mary French. She's the embassy project coordinator based in Baghdad. When Krongard arrived in Baghdad, he was warned by his deputy that French had become, quote, a subject of investigation, end quote, and that he, Krongard, should not meet with her for fear of tainting the investigation. But, the report said, quote, Krongard went through with the meeting anyway and spent several hours with this individual, end quote. James Golden, an embassy project overseer who works on a contract basis for the State Department in Washington and who is also said to be a subject of the Department of Justice probe, may be the other person of interest Krongard met with. The corruption here is of a level that that's all at Bradblog. But in my opinion, the corruption in the Bush crime family, in just every single department, is at a level that would stagger you and me if we actually understood the depth to which it goes. I've said this before, it's like telling you that water is wet. Every single appointee of the Bush crime family, and there are hundreds, if not thousands, is corrupt down to his or her soles of their feet. Filthy corrupt. Billions upon billions. We are at the point where, you'll see a news report, $17 billion missing. Nobody pays any attention. $1 billion is $1,000 million. Billions upon billions of dollars stolen by these sons of bitches. The depth of the corruption of this Bush crime family is staggering. It's something that will take, what's it going to take? Years, decades to get to the bottom of this filthy sump hole that these bitches have, sons of bitches have developed for this country. It's going to take writers. It's going to take investigators. Your grandchildren may hear the full story. Because you and I will not. It is pervasive. It is everywhere in this Bush crime family. Every single department, Buzzy or Howard Krongard, they are nothing but just another example. Cheney's office, the Department of Agriculture, the Department of Interior, every single federal regulatory agency, even the Center for Disease Control, for Christ's sake, every single agency has been corrupted, destroyed, perverted. And here we sit, swallowing or being exposed to report after report after report after report after report after report after report on Barry Bonds or O.J. Redux. It's astonishing. It's astonishing. It makes my head hurt. As Charlie Brown used to say, it makes my head hurt. Don't you ever feel that it's just not worth it anymore? I mean, it's not worth it to pay any attention to this at all. You ever get that feeling? God, I know I mentioned that before on this program, but I get that feeling more and more. What is the point in this anymore? You know, each one of us, we've got our families, we've got a little sphere of influence. Some of the people listening to this program are wealthy, some are middle class, some are lower middle class, some are working class, some are unemployed. Some of the people listening to this program live on the street or in shelters. So we have this whole pyramid of people. And I just wonder, what's the point for any of us to pay any attention to this garbage any longer? I'm starting to really slip into this attitude. All right, not an attitude yet. Not yet, not quite yet. But the question, the big question, is it salvageable? Can we pull this around? Can we turn this around? I mean, sometimes the corruption can be so deep, so wide, that when you stand there and truly see the full scope and scale of it, you just back off and say, holy Christ, I can't, you know, this is overwhelming. This is overwhelming. But to continue to get these reports on and on and on, right now the focus is on this filthy piece of human waste, this Krongard freak family. The Inspector General of the State Department? He obstructs justice, he suborns perjury, he commits perjury? Oh, I know, I know. Nobody's indicted him. Nobody's even come right out and accused. All bat squeeze. What, I'm going to wait? Me? I'm going to wait for that kind of nicety-nice crap? Come on. If it hops like a frog, looks like a frog, and farts like a frog, it's a frog! You don't need somebody to tell you which way the wind is blowing. Stick your finger up. Oh, by the way, to the group in Mayflower, Arkansas, who are having their Dick Cheney look-alike contest tonight and are listening to the Malloy program, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Oh, God. Stick around. No, tonight's not the night that we're just bailing out and saying to hell with the radio career. It's time to go back to telemarketing. No, not tonight. Not tonight. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
Life's too short to listen to right-wing radio. It's more of Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. In fact, your phone call, Sean, is calling from Las Vegas, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Sean. Hey, Sean. Hi, Sean.
Hello?
Yes, Sean, you're on the program. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Oh, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
And, absolutely love your show, and man, I do not know how you hold on to sanity with the crap you have to deal with every day.
Yeah, well, I'm not the only one. There are 300 million of us, but anyway.
Yeah, well, believe me, as soon as the revolution starts, I'll be on the front line. But one of the things I wanted to ask you about, and it's kind of a theory I had of my own, was what exactly these, you know, monsters, for lack of a better word, are actually trying to accomplish in their attempts to destroy the soul of America. Because, I mean, I just can't believe that this is totally an attempt at just acquiring as much money as you can in the shortest period of time, and then, you know, and then jumping ship and, you know, living in the Bahamas, what have you.
I think it goes back to the old admonition that power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. I think there's two things at play here. First of all, the subhuman propensity, it's part of our reptilian brain, I think, to accumulate as much power as possible. And the collateral damage in that accumulation is immaterial. If people die, if children get blown into pieces, if death and destruction occur, the person accumulating the power always has a higher motive. He's doing it for Jesus, or he's doing it for Allah, or he's doing it for the American way, or he's doing it for freedom, or he's doing it for socialism, or he's doing it for the corporations or whatever. There's always some higher justification in that accumulation of power. And the other thing is greed. I know it's staggering for people like you and me to think, Sean, that somebody would take us into war and all that goes with that because they are greedy. But that's exactly what Dick Cheney is. That's the best answer I've got, pal.
You know, it almost seems to me like they're attempting to create or turn America basically into a third world country, because it's always been known. And I've traveled. I've been on every continent on the planet. I worked for the Navy since I was 20 years old. I'm 42 now, and it seems to me like if you get America back into a third world. Into a third world, you know, basically, you know, just a huge population of poor people. We are an extremely efficient workforce, and I think they're attempting to dumb us down to a level where we'll actually begin to allow their lifestyle to permeate through, you know, the rich, and we'll just become a workforce of consumers and producers, predominantly producers, of whatever it is they're after. And take advantage of our work ethic, because, I mean, every place I've been, people are always amazed at how hard America's working, how much we work, and how little time off we take. And I think they wanted somehow, recoup that, get that back under their belt, and actually just simply suck our souls dry to like you're saying, to pad their bank account or whatever.
Well, you know, you're kind of very near the plot line of Huxley's book Brave New World, that was written, I believe, in the 40s. That you know, you had alphas and betas and gammas and deltas, and everybody was genetically engineered to do exactly what they were engineered to do and be very happy with it. You know, you had the worker bees, and then you had the supervisor bees, and all the way up into the ruling elite. And you may be right. I sometimes shudder when I think about how policies by conservatives and Republicans seem just designed to destroy that sense of "let me burst up to the light" feeling that most of us have always had. It's designed to convince us there is no light, that if you keep, you know, striving upward, 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 you're just going to get a nosebleed, so stay where you are and be happy with your lot. This is what religion teaches. Religion always teaches people to accept their lot here, and because the reward will come after death. And I think that's what Republicans are doing too. So you're probably on to something, Sean, very close to the truth. Hey, listen, thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in, okay? Take care. We'll talk again. Maybe we should have another reading. Remember how we read 1984? Maybe we should read Brave New World.
That's a sexy book.
Well, I know. That's why I was sitting here quietly thinking. That'd be like reading the Song of Solomon on the air from the Bible. Couldn't dare do that because the FCC would fine Nova M Radio if I...
I am dark and I am lovely.
Yeah, right. Charles is calling from Boston, listening via the Internet. Hey, Charles, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, how are you tonight?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I share your frustration and the frustration of your listeners at the insanity this country has plunged into.
Oh my God! It's.
I mean, what gets me are the people who seem to genuinely believe that this war in Iraq, that the use of torture protects freedom.
Yeah.
And you try to find logic and reason in their thinking. It's just...
impossible. Charles, can you hold on a minute?
Oh, sure thing.
Okay, let me put you on hold. I'm sorry, I took you too quick here, and we got to do a break. So we'll take the break and come back and talk with Charles and the rest of you folks tonight. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
Ready for a liberal helping of truth? It's more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. We're talking with Charles, who is listening in Boston via the internet. All right, Charles, where were we? You were about to say...
Actually, I wanted to bring up a point about the Democratic debate.
Okay.
that I found tremendously disappointing. For one thing, they wouldn't let Dennis Kucinich speak. I think he was the only one making sense. And any time he had a point to make, they would just pass by him. But there was one key question they put to the candidates. They asked them, which do you consider more important, protecting the security of the country or the rights of the individual?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they picked the security of the country, the power of the state, basically. And it was shocking. It was shocking. And Dennis Kucinich wanted to respond, but, of course, they just passed right by him.
Mm-hmm. I saw one sound clip where he did get to mention impeachment, and I think the audience just let loose, just applauded that idea.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And the other thing that just amazes me, I mean, we're going to select the leader of this country, and don't you think the candidates deserve more than a minute or 2 minutes to articulate what their positions are?
I do.
It's ridiculous. They're put to a stopwatch. So what will you do? What are your policies? I mean, they should be given enough time to make it clear what they will do to this country. But I don't really understand why they're given such short time.
Right. And the other side of that, Charles, they also should be given enough time to either, as you suggest, make their positions and their hope for policies known, or to expose them as the frauds that so many of them are, that they don't have any policies, that they talk with focus groups, or they listen to people who may voice a contradictory opinion to something that the politician would like to do if he or she's elected. So they immediately waffle and hold back. And you know, these are not leaders. In so many instances, they're not leaders. Leaders lead.
Exactly.
And if the people don't agree with the leadership, they don't put them in the leadership role to begin with. Or once they're in the leadership role, we have the mechanisms in place to remove them.
Exactly.
So I'm completely in agreement with you that these politicians should be given a chance to state their case or to demonstrate that they are empty, vapid fools who have no more business running for president than running for mayor of the moon.
And any questions from the audience, I think, should be real questions. They shouldn't be artificial questions that are being beforehand.
It's just the way the whole process is managed, manipulated, and therefore destroyed by television is just it's horrifying. But
I think you're right.
That's where we are. Charles, thanks for checking in.
Have a great night.
All right, sir. Appreciate your call. You know, I used to say, I don't know, 2 or 3 years ago, back when I still had a bit more hope than I have now, that, you know, if I got to be king of America for a while, the first thing I would do in the political process would be to eliminate television as a medium of getting ideas out. Radio, maybe. I might be inclined to leave radio as a means. But people who wanted to vie for elective office, whether it was, county coroner or president of the United States, would have to go out and meet the people, would have to stand on street corners, or go to the basement of churches or synagogues or mosques, or go to civic associations or PTAs or high school gymnasiums. And if that's difficult to do, tough. You know, being the president of the United States should be a difficult job. It shouldn't be something where you sit back on your ass and award all sorts of payoffs to your cronies and to that one-tenth of one-tenth of 1% that provided most of the money for your election. It's just, I don't know, it gets so damn frustrating, doesn't it? Huh? Doesn't it? You know it does. You know. Why am I asking you? You know it does. Dixie is calling from Seattle, listening on XM Satellite Radio. Hey, Dixie.
Yeah, I'm just saying that I get resentful when the corporate media tries to pick my candidate for 08.
Yeah,
and I will not vote for Hillary probably because of that unless I absolutely have to. I believe in the time-honored tradition of voting for the underdog.
Yeah, as long as the underdog is not someone who is underdog because that person doesn't have a clue as to how to govern, right? I mean,
well,
I understand what you're saying, but I usually
Edward Kucinich or what I would pick.
Yeah, but that's because Kucinich, you know, he may be the political underdog, but he's head and shoulders above these other clowns.
Oh, yeah. And then I go around Burien here on my little scooter, and I have so many people compliment my dog on bumper sticker. Government philosophy is if it ain't broke, fix it until it is. And everybody laughs at that, and they say, yeah, right on, you know.
Sure.
But Hillary just doesn't do it for me. And as far as TV's concerned, I hung up television a long time ago. I told them to take it and, you know, what they could do with it.
Yeah.
I listened to XM radio, and I contribute to my particular people that I want to, and I get letters in the mail, political letters and stuff. Mm-hmm. That's how I figure out who I want.
That's probably a very sensible way to do it. Dixie, thanks.
Yeah.
I appreciate you checking in. Take care. We'll talk again. Take care. Couple of emails here. This is from Michael in Roswell, New Mexico. Michael says, I was just listening to the AP radio news audio clip at the break of Robert Gates saying, approximately, that if Congress didn't continue to fund the war, he'd have to start laying off Department of Defense civilian employees. Isn't it a bit odd that he would say that, and there's no one in Congress reminding him that he must spend the money as appropriated? There's a little money he can move around, but the war is being funded separately from the Department of Defense general budget. It's funded virtually entirely out of emergency supplementals and always has been. The Republican Congresses and Bush set it up that way so that the money was virtually unauditable. The Department of Defense general defense budget pays the salaries of those civilians. So, is it legal to lay off civilian DOD personnel to pay for a war that Congress has stopped funding? Even if Gates has the authority to lay off people, why isn't he laying off the 100,000 or so contractors in Iraq that are funded through the supplementals? Jesus, Michael, I mean, you make way too much sense. Yeah, those are good questions. Those are... But I noticed that nobody on the House Armed Services Committee is asking a question like that, huh? And Kate, who I was asking the question, why, you know, sometimes we all get to that point, why continue this nonsense? She says, why? Because we have to. Because freedom, liberty, equality are embedded in our DNA. Because we still believe in the ideals that started the nation. Because I promised my great-grandma and my grandchildren I would fight for them. Because we've been at it so long, what else would we do? Because when so much is at stake, you don't stop when it's hard or when it's all corrupt. Or even when it's impossible, you pass the will to carry on the struggle to those who come after you and just hope they get it. Yeah, I know. I know that. I do. And I think anyone who gets the frustration, I don't know anybody who, I'm not saying they don't exist, but I don't know anybody who said to hell with it and just copped out completely. I know a lot of people who are progressives or liberals or believers in freedom and liberty have decided to move off the grid, so to speak. But I don't know anyone who's really, really, really dropped out. I know a lot of people who have said, you know, I'm going to keep trying. I may drop out after the 08 election if I feel it's rigged. A lot of people have also said, no, that's when we go for the fourth box. So I don't know. It's very, you know, Chinese curse fulfillment. You know, may you live in interesting times. These are interesting times. And I personally The only time I get nervous here, I don't get nervous about another engineered attack on this country, although I realize the Republicans and their whores in media are certainly capable of that. I don't get nervous when I think about an invasion, a legitimate invasion by some terrorist organization, although I guess that possibility certainly exists. I'll tell you when I get nervous, I get really nervous and get a little creepy feeling when I think what so many people in this country, and I think the numbers in the millions, will do if a sense develops around the election in 2008, next year, next September, or next November, that we've been screwed, that something's been stolen, that it's not legitimate. I think we have finally, enough of us anyway, not the majority, certainly not the majority, not even a plurality, but enough of us have gotten to the point where we've said, no, it's not. This is not the way it's going to end. It's not going to end with a whimper. It's not going to end with a bunch of drones walking silently from point A to point B and being told by corporate American media, these are the results of your election. Accept them. Do not question. If there are questions, what I foresee is, and this is why I get that creepy feeling up and down my spine, because I see people taking to the streets, and I see a general uprising, and I see bloodshed. And I see this country really falling into the kinds of spasms that you and I watch on the news, on CNN, the kind of stuff that goes on in Myanmar or Tiananmen Square or downtown Karachi or in the occupied territories or the country of Georgia, or I'm serious. That's what I see.
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's more of Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. Art in Manhattan sent this to me. It's actually it comes from the December issue of Atlantic Monthly. Why home ownership may be bad for America. But it also, there was a blurb about it appeared in the Wall Street Journal. And as Art writes, this may be the corporate world's vision of the ideal American workforce, a nation of rootless economic migrants constantly being downsized, outsourced, and evicted. What it says here, widespread home ownership has proven benefits for the nation, but the Atlantic Monthly's Clive Crook, that's his name, says it brings some serious economic drawbacks with it. Citing research from Warwick University economist Andrew Oswald, Mr. Crook says the main problem with homeowners is that they are less mobile than renters, less willing to leave their homes for greener pastures when the local economy falters. Homeowners slow the nation's economic growth and exacerbate unemployment issues by staying put. Communities of homeowners also often suppress new development by calling for new zoning rules. Jesus, God! Well, there's more here, but you can get this by going to the Atlantic Monthly online, or maybe you have to be a subscriber to read the entire article. Homeowners, because we don't just, you know, we're not Okies. Wasn't that the term back in the Dust Bowl days? The economy disappeared. There was no economy, so, you know, throw the kids and granny and everybody in the car. And if some of your family members die along the way, well, you know, survival of the fittest and all that. And get out there and start picking lettuce in the Promised Land out in California in the Imperial Valley, right? Huh? Wasn't there a book written about that? Oh, God. All right, let's go back to your phone calls. Paula is calling from Bayonne, New Jersey, listening on the Internet. Hey, Paula, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
I'm doing fine.
First of all, I have a request from my friends on the DU Truth Seeker thread.
Okay.
They were wondering if either you or Kathy gets a chance, if you could post pictures from your cruise to the website.
Yeah, we haven't. I'll tell you what the delay here is. Billy Foster at Nova M is building us a new website that is going to work with Nova M's home site. And we're just doing nothing on our site right now. We're waiting until all this can be coordinated, but we will put them up. There are some photos out there. I just don't know where they are. Kathy, do you know where?
Well, I know if you go to the Mike Malloy website and you go into the message boards, someone who was on the cruise with us actually, who took pictures there and put Yuri.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and he put a bunch of them up there, so there are some up there.
Is that the one with Yuri and I standing there in our bathing suits?
And me.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And some cute, and there's a big group shot. There's a big group shot where we were all on the stairs. Actually, that's a really nice picture.
Yeah, that was a good shot.
Chris took
they had a grand staircase inside the cruise ship, and who took that? Chris did. And all 70 of us, I think, 60 or 70 of us are standing on that staircase. It's a great photo. So go to MikeMalloy.com. Click on, what does it say, message board, and...
you're probably going to have to do some kind of search. Just search Truth Seeker Cruise or
Truth Seeker
or
Cruise.
But there are photos, I've seen them, that other people have posted. I'm embarrassed it's not us, but... And there's also a Yahoo group. There's a Truth Seeker Cruise Yahoo group. If you search for it that way, and there are a bunch of pictures there, too. And we will get around to it, I promise.
We will. All right.
Okay, thank you. But that's not what I called to talk
about. I know.
I was just
right.
filling a request to my friends here. What I want to mention is that, you know, all this discussion about the Republican Party, it's like they're not a political party anymore. They're an institution for the criminally insane.
Yeah, isn't that the truth?
And what I'm thinking is, and I've been real cynical today, and what I'm thinking is I think the reason why Hillary Clinton is being pushed so hard in this primary is that it's gotten to the point where it doesn't matter who wins the election. Let's put it this way. Obviously, Hillary Clinton isn't going to appoint, I don't think, crazy right-wing religious fanatics as judges.
Right.
But they don't need them because they've got enough of them in place.
Yeah, I understand that. Everybody from Ralph Nader to George Wallace has said that there's no difference between corporate Republicans and corporate Democrats, and there may be a lot of truth to that. I think the difference is Democrats, just like that email I just read, it's in the DNA of Democrats or liberals or progressives to try to make things better, not make things worse. I think there is a difference between Democrats and Republicans. On the level of George Bush and Hillary Clinton, I still think there's a difference. I can't see, as much as I am not real thrilled with Hillary Clinton's policies, I don't think that she is the kind of filthy, degenerate, war-loving liar that George Bush and everyone around him is. So I still believe that there is a difference between Democrats and Republicans, and that may be because I'm still a jerk, a fool. I don't know.
No, I don't think you're a fool, and I don't think so either. Like, I can't see Hillary Clinton invading a country for no reason,
right,
the way Bush did.
Right.
Or at least she would come up, if she had to, come up with, like, a more viable reason that wasn't, you know, so easily seen through. But as far as, like, for the corporations, for our corporate masters, I mean, she's fine for them. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, and therein lies the problem that I think a lot of Democrats or a lot of people who still believe in our political system are having. with that argument of there's no difference between Democrats and Republicans in a certain essential way, that may be true.
And if you look at it, like, well, just look at the Republican, like the nominee hopeful. I mean, it doesn't. It looks like a Mr. Thorazine pageant or something. Like, it's like they're competing to see who can be the nuttiest. And, like, I can't imagine. And then again, I've been wrong. I mean, I also thought that, you know, marrying themselves to the, you know, crazy religious wackos would hurt the Republicans, too. So, I've been wrong. I'm really not good at predictions. But it's like they're not even trying this time.
Yeah, I hear you. Like, hey, listen, we've got to bail out, Paula, real quick. Okay. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. Just a quick apology to Paula in Bayonne. The reason we bailed out so quickly is I just lost track of the time, and so did Kathy. We were listening to what Paula had to say. And so I apologize, Paula, for just like, hey, gotta go! And then immediately going to commercials. Bob emails in, you know, what happens in regarding what I said about what happens if we decide after the election in 08 that the whole thing was fake and that the new power structure shouldn't be there. Kind of like what happened in 2000, then again in 2004. What happens if it happens again? And I said I fully expect people to rebel against that. And Bob writes, Mike, you're right. If they baldly try to get away with it, maybe there will be people boiling out into the streets, and there is a possibility that it will go bloody. Or maybe somewhere in this country it might go down like the closing scenes of V for Vendetta. What happens when enough people turn their backs on the king? Yeah, that was such a great movie. It really was. And Arlene in Phoenix writes regarding Hillary. Hillary might still create wars, talking about Bush and Hillary, but she would not do it with the utter arrogance and contempt that Bush displays to the average American. He makes no pretense of acting under democracy or considering a nation of diverse people. While many ignore us and what is best for us in the interests of their few elite corporate owners, this bunch does it in the same way someone would normally be civil, but instead simply spits in your face. We simply don't exist. And there's more here, but that's, yeah, you're right, Arlene. I don't think that she would do it that contemptuously. All right, back to your phone calls. Who's next in the barrel tonight? Bob, who is listening on the internet from Seattle, Washington. Hey, Bob, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm doing great. I really appreciate your show.
Thank you.
You know, Mike, when we've got perpetual terror upon the U.S. population, perpetual war, perpetual fear, we've got a criminal, as you stated it well, a criminal organization similar to the mafia, although I think Meyer Lansky and Sam Giancana would actually bow out and blush to this organization that we've currently got.
The mafia had some real bad people in it, but I think they were head and shoulders above, yep, as an organization, this Bush crime family.
I think you're absolutely right on that. Yeah. But Yeah, we should have known when the criminal organization initially took over here after the 2000 election that Bush did not want to sign on to the international court in The Hague, that they must have known that they were going to do this preemptive criminal war in the Middle East initially, knowing that Rumsfeld and Cheney and W could be tried like we did with the Nuremberg criminals that we tried in Germany after World War II for their preemptive war and their criminal, bloodthirsty, preemptive criminal aggression that they created. So I'm wondering if we shouldn't the new shouldn't the Democratic candidates answer whether the U.S. should come under international law and whether or not we could retroactively try these war criminals that we currently have in our government that are if we have a regime change, and hopefully we will, that the new regime would actually welcome criminal trial where we could have Rumsfeld, Cheney, all of these horrible criminals.
Yeah, I would love to see those kinds of questions asked of the Democratic candidates. I would love to see those kinds of questions asked of the Republican candidates, but you know what? They never will be.
But Mike, shouldn't, as the ideal here, if we're going to uphold law, if we're going to be a nation of laws, and we're going to live at least by the Nuremberg laws that we set up after World War II and, of course, the United Nations and Geneva Convention.
Yeah, but we're so far outside those parameters now as to render the position the United States took at Nuremberg as some kind of a fantasy, a memory of something that never happened. We have left that so far behind with the criminal activity of this Bush crime family.
Well, shouldn't then our Democratic, if there's going to be a new Democratic leadership, shouldn't those candidates be held to account that
yes.
we could hold these criminals to a new Nuremberg trial and we could put these darn criminals on trial, W and this Rumsfeld and Cheney and all these liars,
yes.
and actually throw them in prison where they belong?
Bob, I'm right there with you. I absolutely agree. The problem is, in the first place, we have maybe one or two Democrats in the House and or the Senate who have the courage to take on this administration head first. Kucinich is, of course, the one in the House I'm referring to. Secondly, that leaves 434 of them who do not have the courage to do anything along the lines you're suggesting. Secondly, we have a corporate-owned media in this country that could not care less about the aspects of democracy that are so necessary if a group of 300 million people, if you can call that a group, is going to govern itself. They couldn't care less. What corporate media is interested in is the blood sport involved. They don't care. I mean, how many times do you tune in your local news or even network news and the lead story is a goddamn fire someplace? Right? Tanker on fire! Forest fire! You know, the political system is burning up. The Constitution is on fire. But they'll show you a 50-car smash-up on I-5 or Interstate 95 or whatever, and as tragic as those events are, they are not pertinent to the rest of us. They're only pertinent to the people who are involved in the fires or the accident, and they are not watching television. That's when television news becomes nothing more than news pornography. Oh, let's watch people's houses burning. Oh, let's watch smash-ups on the interstate. Ooh, look at that. In the meantime, we are being totally diverted from the fact of what you were just saying, Bob, that the boundaries and parameters and requirements laid out at Nuremberg or in Tokyo after the defeat of the Japanese, that we have gone so far outside those limits. This is an outlaw regime. Jesus Christ! The Bush crime family is the biggest threat to world peace on earth right now. And I defy anyone to tell me what nation is a bigger threat to world peace. And by world peace, I'm not talking about just wars. I'm talking about the entire idea of living peacefully, living in harmony with each other and with the planet. There is no greater threat to all of that than the Bush administration that now runs the United States. Come on, you know that in your gut. You know it. And the right-wingers know it. But what they're thinking is, okay, yes, we're a threat, so let's kick the living Christ out of everybody. Let's beat and defeat everybody so that we can be at the top of the heap. Well, that doesn't work. That doesn't work. Ask any empire. Ask any tyrant in a metaphorical sense. Ask, just take a look at any historical aspect of any of this. And you find that that kind of attitude eventually collapses, corrodes, dies.
Condoleezza, check my fuzzy.
Clarence Thomas, Halliburton, mass destruction, me!
I'm sure that Europe is a lovely place to visit. My wife would love to go there every single year. But they're just puppies.
Yep, 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 yep.
They need to shut their yaps, the big dogs over here. I will rule the world forever. I'm straight and white and male, American and free.
Condoleezza.
Hey, truth seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, more of Mike Malloy.
About 22 past the hour. I sometimes wonder how much longer this program is going to be on the air. I really do. Sometimes I really think about that. This is from PW in North Carolina, who writes, "Hi, Mike. Listening to you on XM, and I just heard a discussion with AJ on his relationship with his Republican friend. I thought I would weigh in. I'm a gay man with a Republican brother. I begged him in 2004 not to vote for Bush because of his support for the constitutional amendment against gay marriage. My pleas fell on deaf ears. He, my brother, would only respond with some BS about the fact that only President Bush can keep us safe. He's not an uneducated man, and he makes a lot of money. I have not spoken with him since. Being Republican removes any compassion, empathy, or sense of social justice, and in this case, familial loyalty, from your very being. They are empty, emotionless robots. Frightening and disgusting." PW and NC. Yeah, there is no doubt in my mind that that's the truth. I've tried to understand what it is that motivates a Bush supporter. Since Bush is the most, on the one hand, inane, pointless idiot, on the other hand, totally corrupt mass killer that's as far as I know has ever sat, with the possible exception of Dick Nixon, the difference being that Nixon was a genius compared to this jackass that sits in the Oval Office now. But I've tried to understand, what is it that motivates an American to support George Bush? And the only answer I could come up with, and even this is kind of shaky, is cowardice. Fear that the Americans who support him are just absolute cowards. They're afraid of their own shadow. They have bought into this myth of, oh, there's a boogeyman coming, and George will protect you. But it's been my experience over the course of my life that every single Republican is at bottom a total coward, absolute moral coward. From Mayflower Mike, the one that's having a big party. Mr. Michael and Kathy, it would do your soul, the thing that you walk around with every day, good to be here tonight. We have at last count, 73 people over. 30 came as Dick Cheney lookalikes. And the winner was Bud with his hula skirt and coconut breasts. The 15-pound Pettie Jean ham was furnished by Big Star Foods right here in Mayflower. People in their hearts are scared, and on nights like this, they are free Americans again. Of course, the booze and the smoke helps, but for a time, they are free, and they have hope, and your show gives them that. Thanks. November 30th, by the way, is tinfoil hat night for this crowd. Keep it light. We are great people. We have poor leaders. From Mayflower Mike. Back to your phone calls. Nate is calling from Baltimore, listening on the internet. Hello? Hey, Nate, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hey, Mike, how are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you, Nate?
Okay, good. First, I'd like to say blessings to you and your family, Kathy and Molly, and
thank
the rest
you.
Of your extended family.
Thank you. That's very kind.
Okay, no problem. Absolutely. You deserve it. Okay, now, I wanted to basically talk about three issues. Maybe I'll stray into a fourth if I have time. I know you're pressed for time.
Go ahead.
But the first thing is, I'm definitely with you, and as far as the media is concerned, Chris Matthews has been on the air for at least 10 years. They just had their anniversary, mm-hmm. and no one's ever actually called them out.
Mm-hmm.
on his biases and his...
Stephanie Miller did.
Getting ready to say. When Stephanie Miller called him out.
Stephanie Miller nailed him, right.
She nailed him, but, you know, and I love Stephanie, but she backed off when he was so incredulous how he could be a Republican tool.
Yeah, she was cutting him some slack. Because Stephanie is a decent human being.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. She was cutting him a little slack. She was saying, look, I just gave you the rope.
Slack.
I wrapped it around your neck. Now I'm going to step back and not let you fall through the trap door.
They don't get it. When I say, now I'm talking about Stephanie, I'm saying the media, especially Chris Matthews. When she stepped back, that gave him the room to say, oh, it really couldn't be me.
That's
when
right.
he appeared on Jon Stewart's show, and Jon Stewart called him out about his book,
uh-huh.
how it's really sad.
He didn't know what to do.
And then he actually, even afterwards, he gave some interview, I don't even know where, you know, but you can probably Google it and find it, where he thinks he's got the better of that situation because he handled Jon Stewart.
Yeah, right, he did. Hey, Nate, hold on a minute. I got to do a break here. Just hold
okay,
on.
Sure.
Hold on. Let me put you on hold. We'll come back. And we're going to do everything to get your call before the program's over tonight if you're on hold. So stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
Talk radio right. From the left, it's more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. We're talking with Nate in Baltimore. All right, Nate, thanks for holding on. Where were we?
Oh, no problem, Mike. You know, as I said, I actually really love to hear your other callers and stuff, so I'm not going to take too much longer, but I did want to cover two other additional things.
Okay.
The first being during the last primary in Baltimore and the last general election, I worked as an election judge. And it was a really cool experience except for
that we were using the Dabo machines.
Oh, God.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, of course, we're not supposed to express to the voters how we really feel about the Dabo machines, but the best thing about, I guess, being an election judge is actually having interactions with other judges.
Right.
And our chief judge was a Republican. Well, we have two, a Democratic and a Republican judge.
Right.
So the chief judge, the Republican, he's a gung-ho America firster. Absolutely.
Right. 100%. Right.
And in talking to him, just in the sources of information that he uses, i.e. Sean Hannity,
mm-hmm.
Rush Limbaugh, and he always says, well, they're all great Americans.
Oh, God. God, it just makes me want to open up my own jugular vein.
But this guy, and his name is the most generic name you could have, John Brown. That was his name.
Yeah.
The great emancipated John Brown, that was his
right,
name.
Right, right.
And the conversations in which we had, you know, they were very engaging, but his lack of information, he still actually believes that there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq.
So yeah, and Saddam hid him underneath the sand dune.
Or sent him to Syria.
He sent him to Syria. That's right. That's what happened. They sent him to Syria. Absolutely.
So as we're talking and we're laughing about it, well, I'm laughing about it, and I'm telling him, well, you need to read PNAC. And
right.
He's like, what's PNAC?
What's PNAC?
What's PNAC? So, and just experiencing his knowledge, and he was like, Nate, you're a very intelligent guy. I didn't understand this, you know, and I'm going to go look it up. But I knew he wasn't going to go look it up. But the funniest thing about that experience, he started talking about his family's history, how they were in Virginia, and they had folks working for him.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, you mean slaves? And he was like, oh, you do know.
Oh, my God.
But that's pretty much what I have to say. But last, I want to get a plug in to I'm deep into my Stephen King phase still. I'm reading The Wolves of Calla now.
Yeah.
And I'm going to big that up to you again. I remember I called you a while back, and my whole conversation was, you know, I have to tell you one thing, but first thing, and then a first thing, and then another first thing.
Right, right, right.
And then you got on me, you say, oh, yeah, and what's the other first thing? But you're absolutely the best. And when I talk about Stephanie Miller, when I talk about Randy Rose, Guy uh-huh. James and stuff, and Mike Malloy, definitely, you're out there, and I really feel as though if you all were able to go on these shows and actually put the truth to them, although you're never invited. And when you do get on those shows, I remember during your break
mm-hmm.
when you left Air America,
right,
and then
right.
for a while, you know, you were out in the air. You actually went on MSNBC, and they put you up against this far-right dude, and you were just so exasperated by his ignorance and stuff. I was like, oh, Mike Malloy, please. And you know how, like, sometimes you're wishing for,
mm-hmm.
you know, your person to get out there and just blaze them away.
Mm-hmm.
But you're on that show and you have 40 seconds to get an idea across and you can't. But you did very well.
Yeah, well,
thank you for that.
Thanks, Nate. I gave up all that, although, I should be honest. I don't get the phone calls anymore from MSNBC or CNN to come and sit in on one of those shootouts. And that's fine with me because I can't do it anymore. You know, I'm liable to, that stuff is done in real time, just like this radio program is. And if you listen on the internet here, you get a delay, but it's done in real time. And I'm just liable to call somebody's, somebody an MF or something on those programs anymore. I can't do it anymore. And I think the folks who do the booking, they understand. You know, I would much rather see Rachel Maddow than Mike Malloy, and I mean that, going up against these right-wing pieces of human waste. Rachel is cool, calm, and collected, and at the same time, she's very smart, and she knows how to handle these freaks. I just want to grab them. And the problem is, we're never in the same studio, you know. I mean, the right-wing freak will be in Baltimore, for example. No offense, Nate. And I'll be in Atlanta. And something will come up. I just wonder, you know, I'm going to reach through the time-space warp and grab their head and rip it off. I'm serious. You know, I can't stand these people anymore. I can't do it anymore. So the few times since my last appearance on MSNBC that I've been called, I've respectfully begged off. And I've told the producers, look, thank you, I appreciate it, but, you know, I think my days of doing that is over, are over, because I can't handle it. I love to watch Rachel. I love to watch Stephanie. Because they know how to handle these freaks. They know how to do it. I don't know. They just do a much better job than I would. You know, if I get on that, if I get on one of those head-to-head shootouts that the producers always want. And this, the ironic part was back in the day when I was doing that sort of thing, the producers, the segment producers that would call from MSNBC or CNN or even Fox, and, you know, I told Fox, you know, I was on Fox one time, and I just told them, you know, go away, don't ever come back, or I'll have your ass assassinated. Just get out of my face. But the line or the segment producers used to say, now, you know, stir it up a little bit, you know, and I used to say back, what are you talking about? You think that I have to, what, reach into some trick bag of false emotion and stir it up a bit? I hate these SOBs. I hate them. You know, put me on with one of them. I hate them. But I just don't do it anymore because I don't trust myself. I do not trust myself. And apparently, the segment producers at these networks don't trust me either. Jack writes, Mike, earlier in your program, you spoke of CNN's prepackaged softball questions prepared for Hillary and the candidates during the last night's so-called Democratic debate. That's the least of our problems. What I'm referring to, Jack writes, is how this very same CNN continuously allows the vitriolic Glenn Beck to come onto the airwaves each evening and spew falsehoods, as he did again the other night. Beck opened the show by inferring that the U.S. military should be used to silence domestic dissent against the war, and insinuated that 9/11 truth people and Ron Paul supporters are a terrorist threat because they are causing disenfranchisement with the government. Glenn Beck and CNN, unless it has a retraction, are essentially calling for the U.S. military to be used to suppress freedom of speech. Sadly, this brainwashed bastard Beck just received a multi-million-dollar offer radio contract where he'll continue his diatribes, which will only further divide an already fractured America. Can we turn this thing around, you ask? Maybe after the revolution. Have a good weekend, Jack. Yeah, I don't understand the Glenn Beck thing. Glenn Beck is just a poisonous, ignorant little son of a bitch. I mean, he's not as entertaining as Hannity, as weird as Hannity is. Watching him, you can laugh because of his bottomless ignorance. I mean, I have never, and Hannity used to work here in Atlanta when I worked here in Atlanta. And I've met him socially. I've hung out with, I've said this a million times, his wife Jill used to work with my daughter Wendy, yada, 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 yada. But I've never met anybody with a bottomless pit of stupidity, vacuity, and ignorance like Sean Hannity. It's an absolute joke. So Hannity is almost comedic to watch. Limbaugh is a sick, drug-peddling son of a bitch who belongs in an institution. But Glenn Beck is poisonous. He's absolutely poisonous. And CNN should be ashamed of itself for ever giving this weaselly bastard airtime. Glenn Beck is just a walking roach hotel. He's absolute poison. And I don't understand what CNN's about with that sort of thing. I really don't. I have heard through very reliable sources that Ted Turner just almost, how does Stephanie put it, throws up a little bit in his mouth every time he knows that Glenn Beck is on what used to be his network. I remember when they started CNN Headline News and what that was going to be about. And now to have a piece of human waste like Glenn Beck on there, oh my God. But those are the guys that always do get the multi-million-dollar contracts, there's no question, because corporate America is out to do exactly what you think it's out to do, to make sure that the divisions continue, that the destruction of the idea of freedom and liberty and constitutional protections continues, and that we are reduced to people who will rush to the malls on Xmas and spend all our money and buy all this crap and junk. And horse, just, God, here I go again. And that we will shut up. We'll be very happy to take our 3 days a year off, Not me. I mean, I've got a contract with Nova M that requires time off. But the average working person in this country, as somebody pointed out this evening, this highly productive workforce that is constantly just urinated all over by on by corporate America, it's vile. Even the unions have turned against the workers. The unions have turned against us now. So deep sigh. All right, we have a break here coming up very quickly, and we'll come back and finish up the program tonight. All right? All right? You can start the music now. Go ahead. We're going to come back and talk with Edie and possibly Bruce and maybe Gary and Steve. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Red, white, and blue. People shuffling their feet. People sleeping in their shoes. There's a warning sign on the road ahead. There's a lot of people saying we'd be better off dead. Don't feel like safe, but I am to them. So I try to forget it any way I can. Keep on rocking in the free world. Keep on rocking in the free world. Keep on rocking in the free world. Keep on rocking in the free world.
Just as I thought it was going all right, I found out I'm wrong. It's always the same, it's just a shame, that's all. I could say day, and you'd say night. Tell me it's black, when I know that it's white. Always the same, it's just a shame, and that's all.
It's about 9 before the hour. Reggie writes in to let me know that Karl Rove was just hired as a contributing writer at Newsweek magazine. Oh, my God. Reg adds another go figure. Nah, it's not a go figure, Reg. It's to be expected. You know, what the hell? Oh, my God. Well, Karl Rove, a contributing writer at Newsweek. Hey, thanks to the crew, the usual crew, who assists in putting this program together five nights a week. Ian Huff, Billy Foster, our senior correspondent out of Minnesota, Chris, and our executive producer, Catherine Bay. Karl Rove, hired as a contributing writer at Newsweek magazine. Jesus, God. Oh, well. Edie is calling from Montgomery, Alabama. Edie, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Mike. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. Haven't heard from you for a while.
I know it. I get around to it every two or three months, don't I?
Yeah, you do.
Well, I was watching Bill Moyer's journal earlier.
Uh-huh.
He did a piece about that Mississippi and Haley Barbour, and he used his influence with the Bush crime family to get control of monies that were
mm-hmm.
put into his state, some which was designated for low-income housing.
Yeah.
And, well, the federal government, nobody else, no other state's got this kind of a favor,
mm-hmm.
gave turned it over to his wisdom to know what to do with it.
Oh, sure. Haley Barbour was, he was the former head of the Republican National Committee. He is one of the most corrupt sons of bitches in the Republican Party and is now the governor of Mississippi. So, he's instrumental in keeping Bush in office. He's an absolute pig, Edie, as you know.
Oh, as I know. I thought about Sarge. I thought, no wonder he had to get the hell out of there.
Really?
And they showed some footage of the casinos are back.
Oh, sure.
Never. and there's nice little condos built at a place where the view will be wonderful someday.
And Haley Barbour gets a piece of every bit of that. Haley Barbour is like Sam Giancana without the charm.
Well, the beautiful new building is juxtaposed to the ruins of other people's lives.
Sure, sure.
Haven't put that away yet.
Absolutely.
So anyway, if you know about the movie that's come out, Beowulf?
Yes.
Yeah, my sister loves special effects, so she'll love to see that. But it got me thinking about Grendel, because I read this thing 100 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and I thought, that's Chaney.
That is Chaney. Absolutely is Chaney. Sure it is. That's I read that our class read it when I was in, I don't know, a junior in high school, and it was the most frightening story I had ever in my life read at Beowulf, and it remains one of the more frightening stories. Even though it has the epic qualities of the hero overcoming the monster, it's still, and I can't wait to see the movie. There's another one that I understand is excellent, is Redacted.
Yeah.
So between those two, Beowulf and Redacted, if we can just find a babysitter, damn it, we're going to go to the movies.
Well, if I was still in Atlanta, I'd volunteer.
If you were still here, you'd have the job. Edie, thanks. You have a good weekend, all right?
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Take care. Take care. That's what we ought to read some night. Start reading Beowulf. Huh? You think? I had a hell of a time with the Old English, because the way we read it was in the old English, and it was...
How old are you?
I am old. Kathy, if I ever told you, you'd immediately file for divorce.
Well, they stopped speaking in Old English about 600 years ago, didn't they?
Who is this?
Were your books printed?
Who is this they?
I mean, like with a press?
All right, we're flat out of time. Bruce, I'm not going to get to you tonight. Nor Steve. I'm sorry, guys. Nor Gary. I apologize. And the people who are just calling in, there's just no reason to put you on for 30 seconds. So try next week. I promise we'll put you on. I promise we'll put you on. And thanks for participating in the program all this week. Everyone who did that, no matter how you did that, phone call, just tuning in, even you right-wingers who sit in the darkness of your little hovels, naked, playing with yourselves while you listen to this program, even you, we appreciate the amazing energy that you provide for the program. I'll see you Monday, all right? Have a great weekend. Take care. Please, take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. I'm going straight to hell. I'm going straight to hell. Just like my mama said. I'm going straight. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.